Hi, I'm Sharon Davis, Chief Executive of Young Enterprise, and welcome to our podcast series, Transforming Futures. I'll be talking with special guests from many different walks of life, all of whom have fascinating life experiences and a shared commitment to helping young people build successful futures. We explore how the powerful chemistry of support and opportunity have shaped their own lives, getting their individual takes on future skills needed across a range of industry sectors, and what more we can do as a society to help young people build and apply those skills. My guest today is Ian Howells. Ian is the Executive Vice President at EMA at Honda. He's qualified as a chartered accountant and took full advantage of what the large accountancy firms had to offer, including overseas assignments and secondment to Uganda. After holding several global and pan-European CFO and CEO appointments, mainly for American businesses, he joined Honda in 2008 and is currently leading their operations in EMEA. He is an enterprising advisor in Bracknell, sits on the UK Automotive Council and the CBI Southeast Council, and he also mentors MBA students and business leaders. Ian, it's really lovely to speak to you. Welcome to Transforming Futures.
Well, thank you very much, Sharon.
In researching your career before we met, Ian, you've had roles which have literally took you around the world. I'm curious to hear how that all started. And essentially, what does the chemistry of support and opportunity mean to you personally?
Well, I'd like to say that I ended up going around the world with a plan in mind, but to be perfectly honest with you, it was more daydreaming. I grew up in Wallasey, which is in the Merseyside area of the UK. My school overlooked the local railway line. It wasn't a very exciting line. It was Mersey Rail, so it only really went from A to B. But either way, it was me daydreaming outside the window, wondering where the trains were going and whether or not that was somewhere I could go to. As it turned out, that just sort of started this bug and this desire, if you like, to travel a little bit. To be honest with you, it took me a lot further than I originally expected. But nevertheless, it was something that I sort of held on to. It was something that always interested me, was the travel element. And I have to say, partly my career has enabled me to do that. But going back to your point about support and opportunity, I think the starting point was very much my own family from that perspective. There was an aspiration. I grew up with one sibling. The aspiration was that we would go on to greater things, if you like. So both my brother and I were amongst the first in our family to go to university. It really was from the family that drive started to come. But I think as well, we had generally a good experience growing up. We both went to good comprehensive schools. And from that point of view, the teachers were an important part of it. I wouldn't say there was one particular teacher or one particular subject that provided me with the support, but it was just a general feel within the school that they wanted you to do well. They would help you to do well. And it was quite, in some ways, quite an empowering atmosphere that I grew up in. So that was a very key part in terms of particularly the support element. I guess in terms of opportunity, like I said, went on to university down in Birmingham. And I have to say that was to some degree driven by the economics I was growing up with at the time in the Liverpool area. It was a time when the center of gravity in the UK was going towards the south rather than northwest, which was obviously more US focused, and we ended up much more European focused. The city started to go backwards economically. And I very much grew up at a time when unemployment was particularly high. And therefore, I had this real desire to move on, control my own destiny in that respect, and drive a career out of that. And that's really what I did. So it was very much a combination of factors came together. And just one thing, if I may, I'm just adding to your the whole idea behind the support and opportunity, is I think it was also, and I could broadly call this engagement, but it was really about inspiration as well. In terms, I was really engaged with doing something different and doing something that inspired me. So it wasn't just the opportunities that presented themselves. It was also the fact that there were certain things that I engaged with, and one of which was very much business. just putting a little bit of life on the table there. For some reason, and I still can't explain this, I always wanted to be mentioned in the Financial Times. I managed to first achieve this when I qualified as a chartered accountant, but subsequently I've managed it several times. So there's a little bit of life experience and a little bit of inspiration and aspiration, probably more appropriately. Just simple little things like that. Simple wins sometimes feel the greatest.
And also you're talking there essentially about goal setting in some ways, aren't you? About, you know, getting mentioned in the Financial Times. I'm interested, do you think that's like intrinsic motivation, or did your dad talk about, what was the whole thing about being mentioned in the Financial Times?
It wasn't inspired by my family particularly, because I don't think we never saw the Financial Times. I can't remember where it came from, but it was just, and I think this is just go back to goal setting, as you said, is a little bit, it's about those little wins as I described them, but meaning that to get that win, you've got to achieve something else. So the Financial Times bit was very much, well, I have to achieve something to get in there in the first place, then I achieved my win. But I always did have a big interest in business, and I did used to follow some of the big British companies very much at the time. And therefore, from that perspective, I think that's where my aspiration came from.
Well, it's incredible to listen to you talk about those essential building blocks in terms of goal setting. You went on to an incredible career, which of course you're still building. We'll talk a little bit more about the motor industry in a minute. But just in terms of those superpower skills, I guess, that's helped you navigate your journey to date, what would you say they were, and how did you go about building them?
I guess I've always been a good listener and very patient. Again, I'm not entirely sure where that comes from, but very much I think the time I was growing up, it was a much more adult type of world, if I could put it that way. So I used to accompany my parents pretty much everywhere at one time or other. And of course, if you're in the environments of adults, you tend to be the listener as a child rather than a participant. So I used to pick things up that way. So listening to other conversations. And therefore, from that perspective, you became attuned to understanding what people were saying was not necessarily what they meant. So you started to pick these skills up as I went along on that. I think resilience, as I said earlier on, I came through an economic environment that wasn't great. As I went through my career, there have been certain instances, and I mentioned them perhaps a little ahead of time in the chronology, but when I joined Honda, I joined just as the financial crisis hit. And you can imagine that in a company the size of Honda and the complexity, that really did demand a high level of resilience in terms of picking up a very serious problem, being able to run with it and see it through to a natural conclusion, and obviously a positive conclusion in that respect. But I think also two particular factors I'd certainly say were very contributory to my career advancement, and actually in some ways was something I proactively did, was very much around curiosity. Always been very curious, always wanted to know how things worked rather than just accepting them for what they were. And I think as you go through a business, understanding how it works, and I don't mean that in the sense of just being, as I was to start with, very much financially orientated and looking after the books and the records and the accounting and all that type of good stuff, very essential part, but it was the rest of the business as I started to grow an interest in. So, for example, you mentioned Johnson Controls and some predecessor companies there that I worked for. We're in the ventilation and refrigeration business. So I wanted to know how refrigeration worked. I wanted to know how HVAC worked. And therefore, I took an active interest in what the engineers were talking around, what the sales guys were saying, what the purchasing guys, and of course, the manufacturing side of the business as well. So I was always very interested. And because I was a good listener, my engagement with people from that area was always very empowering for me, but equally because I was showing interest, they were interested in me. And therefore, when I actually then came back to them later on, if you like, with a particular request, whether it be financial or otherwise, they were ready to talk because I'd already done that bit with them. They were ready to talk to me. Finally is empathy, and I guess that connects a little bit to what I've just said. Being able to put yourself in others' shoes or others taking others' perspective, I think is enormously powerful as a business leader. Now, it's not for everybody. It's not necessarily something that comes naturally. I think it is something you can work on. And certainly, I think from that perspective, I would always encourage people to do it is if you can provide that empathy, you will know where they are coming from. And going back to being then able to leverage that in terms of being able to understand how you get the best from that person because of the way they might be working. It may be the environment they're operating in at that particular point in time, whether that be social, personal, or within the business. And I think if you can show that empathy and that understanding, then you do take the conversations, you do take the discussions forward in a much more meaningful way. And I would say that probably underpins my leadership style and to some degree success in being able to manage people across a very broad range of capabilities and both academic and technical.
Mm. And I imagine whether the issue is a financial crash or a pandemic, those cornerstone skills of resilience, empathy, curiosity, being able to listen are really foundational or have been foundational in your success as a leader.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, again, perhaps this may be slightly out of the ordinary, but when I was in Africa, I was actually kidnapped and at gunpoint.
Really?
And I think all those things very much came into play, perhaps less curious than anything else, but certainly the ability to listen, to manage the situation you're in to the best that you can, and have that empathy, in my case with those kidnappers, meant that I came out of it, well, unscathed. Those types of life experiences, if you can take those and build on them, then it puts you in a very different place and in terms of your understanding, again, of the type of people that you might meet as you go through your business career.
Well, that's certainly one example of transferable skills there. Just reflecting on that, Ian, and thinking about you as a leader, you as an individual, the skills that you've built, your, I guess, knowing you a little bit, your passion for wanting to give back. I know you're an enterprise advisor in school. Tell me a little bit about why that's important to you and what difference do you think that industry engagement in schools can make to young people building skills?
I think it works in a number of ways. I think I've always had very much as a, perhaps principle is the correct word, is giving my time for free and my experience for free. So what I mean by that is that I will share with you my life experiences or whatever they may be, and you take them for what you can make with them. But I'm not looking for anything in return. I will just give that. I'm not expecting you then to come back to me and say, well, I did X, Y, Z, and you might consider this. It's much more about giving, as I said, back for free. And I think in that respect, quite often when you're in the senior leadership roles, it's giving time more than anything else, giving time to listen, giving time back in terms of your experience. So for an example, we run internal courses, big leadership courses and the like, and I make sure that I'm at all of those. One, I can understand what we're obviously training our people in, educating our people in, but also they can look to me in terms of this program must be important. You know, Ian is here or one of the senior leadership team is here. It's important. And I think to some degree that starts to reflect itself when you go outside. I'm from Honda. I'm not a teacher. I wouldn't pretend to be a teacher. And therefore, I come at these, a discussion with a student probably from a very different angle. And also, I can talk about Honda in a way that other people perhaps engage with. I can talk about our cars. I can talk about our motorbikes. I can talk about our aircraft. I can talk about our lawnmowers and water pumps and generators and all that type of thing. You can talk about that in a way that brings it to life. So, our electric generators sales suddenly shot through the roof because of the Ukraine crisis, for example. And I think those actual examples, those lived examples, give a sense of engagement to the business as well. Businesses are very complex. We know that. And you look at a company like Honda, and the skills we require is of a huge range. And it's not just about what you might term the newer skills, the green skills, the data skills. It's all the skills that go alongside making a company like ours so successful.
And building on that and looking ahead to the future of the motor industry, Ian, what changes do you anticipate happening in the sector, say, over the next 10 years?
Huge, actually. The process has already started. So we love acronyms in Honda, but also in the car business as well. So the acronym to remember is CASE, which stands for Connected, Autonomous, Subscription and Electrify. And this really sums up what's happening in our industry at the moment. It's really changing very significantly. Yes, there is electric cars on the road. And you might think, well, it's quite simple just moving from a conventional petrol-driven car to electric. Well, I can assure you it's a lot more complicated than that. When we're looking at connected vehicles, you know, our expectation now is that our cars basically speak to us remotely. It's able to connect, obviously, to the web or to the internet or our social media, whatever it is we're trying to connect to. But it must have that capability. In terms of autonomous, lot of talk about autonomous vehicles, whether or not we end up with self-driving. I personally think we're a little way off finally getting there. But nevertheless, the technical aspects of the cars these days mean they can be pretty autonomous. What broadly holds back autonomy to a large degree is the infrastructure in which we work, and that can be everything from legal to physical infrastructure in the street. And then finally is around subscription. You know, do we pay for cars in the same way that we used to, or do we just effectively rent cars for the period in which we need them? Is that starting to change? And again, in part it is.
Well, clearly lots of changes on the horizon when it comes to the motor sector. What skills do you think will be most important to address those changes?
Well, I think certainly we are seeing that the ability to use data, social media in particular, are increasingly important. But I would certainly say there's a lot of what you might call the older skills are still very much in demand. Now, they're going to be refocused, though, and I think that's what we're very much finding at the moment, is that the base skills, generally speaking, we have in the organization, but they need to be applied in a different way. And certainly we're seeing that in our financial management, in our marketing, in those more traditional type of skills that you might expect in a company of our type and size. And I think that's an important message is, yes, there's new stuff, but sometimes it's refocusing what you already know and making sure that you're building on the capabilities you already have to take you into the new areas of business that we require and the new skills we require.
And so when you're talking about base skills applied in a different way, you're talking like things like problem solving, organization, are there a set of base skills you're referring to?
Yes, very much so. Certainly experience shows itself through in that respect as well. But generally speaking, and we do get bright people who come to Honda. We don't expect them to have everything that we need from day one. They won't understand Honda. They may not understand the Japanese culture or the Japanese way of doing business. And these are things that people will learn, and we'll make sure that people gain that capability and that experience as they go. But it does mean that they need to engage with us. So to some degree, this comes back to the whole support, opportunity, engagement piece we were talking around earlier on, is that we need that engagement. If we've got the person who engages with us, then we can work with them to make sure that they're in areas that are of interest to them, that inspire them. They are given the right skills and the right training or additional training if that's required. But then probably just more importantly in many respects is that they have the management support thereafter to continue with that development.
And that's interesting. It's probably quite a little known fact. I didn't know it until recently, but the UK is eighth in the world when it comes to manufacturing outputs. And you talk about being able to showcase the wide range of opportunities in motoring and perhaps wider in manufacturing. What do you think we could do to showcase those opportunities both now and in the future?
I think very much get out there and explain. When you look at a modern manufacturing business, you know, a lot of it is done in what you might term an office as opposed to a more traditional factory floor. But manufacturing comes in many types, and certainly, as you quite rightly say, my understanding is eighth in the world as well, and we do tend to think of ourselves as not being a manufacturing giant any longer. Nevertheless, it's an important part of our economy, and it is important that we understand the skills. But for us, I think it is getting out there. It is about communicating. It is about engaging with students as they come through whatever system they're coming through, and that could be anything from apprenticeship through to degree level and leave us straight from school. There are a wide number of ways of engaging that will ensure that we get the right people into our businesses and they understand our industry. And likewise, and I think this is something that certainly my experience as an enterprise advisor, but also to some degree young enterprise as well, is the engagement of the parents. As their children are coming through this system and process, that's just such an important part of getting the students engagement as well. Now, I work for an industry that is, you know, very good at making sure everybody hears about it, and it has a whole raft of people who are doing that job every day. But I think it's important that it is understood as being accessible as well. As a company, we do take very seriously our commitments around diversity, and that diversity maybe in terms of individual skills, in ethnicity, in gender, but also educational levels or whatever they may be. We need those people in our organization because at the end of the day, our customers come from that diversity itself. And it's such an important part of how we do business. So that for us is very important. We have an underlying phrase in our business that we do roll out quite regularly, is that we want to be a company that society wants to exist. And for me, that requires good communication, because if you can't communicate what you're about, then people aren't going to understand it. But it does require a level of transparency and a level of engagement that goes well beyond the normal, both internally and externally. But I think that's such an important phrase, and one that I would like to see lots of companies adopt, if not the same words, then something of a similar nature. Because I think companies have an important role to play in the community, quite aside from providing work and jobs.
And I know that's something that's been important to you and to Honda. We're really appreciative and proud of our longstanding partnership with Honda. Just thinking about social mobility and, you know, essentially what you were saying, that the talent is universal, and it's how do we increase access to opportunity to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to make a positive contribution. How do you think we can best equip Gen Z and Alpha employees across the country with the knowledge and the experience so that it's fit for the future and they can make those contributions?
Just constantly learning. I worked for a very large accounting firm for a number of years, and there was one particular partner there, and he said to me, I don't know what the context was, but he said to me one time, always look at your CV. And if by the end of the month you can't say that I added to that, then make sure that in the following month you add two things. And I always had that as a bit of a watchword, if you like, in terms of making sure that I was always adding to my understanding of the business, whatever that may be. So that lifelong learning may not necessarily be formal, but it's something that you can apply yourself in terms of providing that curiosity I spoke about earlier on, perhaps, is just making sure that you're constantly learning and you don't let yourself slip backwards. Now, a good company, and I think we pride ourselves in Honda for being a good company in that respect, very much we're looking to develop people internally. We're looking to make sure that learning is there. Obviously, digital and green transformation is very important to us as a business. I mentioned it earlier on. So very much we need to make sure that engages Gen Z in that way. But also, I think going back to my engagement point is, actually, if we're looking in those areas, and those are important to Gen Z, the greening of the economy, obviously the climate crisis, then these are things that they will engage with. And if we've got a very engaged employee, we can work with them to make sure that they then gain the skills that they require. So sustainability is a very big subject in our business, as you might expect. And our capability in that area is being built. And we hope to build it through employees we already have. So we will provide the support, we'll provide the training to make sure that they are ready for that new economy. And I have to admit, yeah, the majority of our sustainability team are quite young, just coming out of university or quite recent in their careers. So it's obviously, again, that engagement piece. Inclusivity, I mentioned earlier on, and making sure that we do give that, we apply that right throughout. Now, we're a bit centric in the UK, but we are a European and Middle Eastern African business. And very much that we look to make sure that there is equality in terms of the opportunities that are open wherever you are within Europe. And that equally goes wherever you are in the UK. And in fact, actually, you mentioned the pandemic in the introduction. You know, the pandemic is something that has meant we've re-looked at the way we do business and realized that actually we can do quite a bit remotely now. So you don't actually have to be commuting into work every day. You can do work remotely. Now, there are certain things that we would always want to make sure people do come into a central location for, particularly development of culture of the organization and the way we want to work and develop those skills that we're looking for. But nevertheless, it does mean that we can support a much more flexible way to work, perhaps we were able to do. So we've really moved on quite a bit. And I think that's something that certainly the feedback we get, younger employees certainly do engage with and appreciate.
And we're very, very nearly out of time, but I've got a very quick question, so I need a quick answer. We're inviting teachers to ask industry leaders practical questions to help them preparing young people for the world of work. I've got a great one here, given your focus on resilience. As a teacher, how can we champion behaviours like resilience and job satisfaction for Gen Z?
I think certainly wherever you come into an organisation, it's very different. You need to learn it, and you need to make sure that you learn how to build that resilience as you go. It's not something necessarily we all have as a matter of course. It's something that you do need to build. As a business, we can look to manage people in certain ways. We can make sure that there's a very clear career map, for example. We can always make sure that they're very clear on how they link into the broader business goals. So how does what you are performing today link into when we roll it all up into a good level of profitability or a brand new model coming out or making sure our quality is right, whatever it may be. So I think that's very important. And then build on that with in terms of empowerment. I think if people feel empowered, then they can take the knocks as they come along because they do feel I've got some control over this. Therefore, it does build very much resilience. And I think also, as I mentioned earlier on, is things like making sure that there's good engagement with the community in which we're operating in. I think if people can connect with the business through the community, and that might be through politics, it could be through government, it could be just because we're located in a certain place, then I think that informal and formal feedback you get is very important in terms of making sure that, yes, I understand where the business is going. I understand what the business stands for. And therefore, the business is that clear in terms of how it wants to operate. And I engage with that as an individual. Then I think it puts you in a great place to demonstrate that resilience and indeed to build it.
And what a way to end. Ian, thank you so much for your input on this episode of Transforming Futures. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing about the powerful impact that support and opportunity has had on your own journey, your extremely varied career, right from those early school days as a young lad growing up in Merseyside, and still that beautiful accent is still there, but growing up in Merseyside in the 1970s, watching the trains go by. It's been insightful hearing about the future skills that Honda are looking for, and thank you personally and also to Honda for your long-standing commitment to increasing access to opportunities for young people. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you very much, Sharon. It's been a pleasure.
Next week, I'll be speaking with David Bodu, a previous participant of the Young Enterprise Startup Programme and founder of Vistella Cycling. We're talking with him about how his family and faith have supported him as an entrepreneur. Look out for that podcast, which will be available next week.